Welcome to The Secret Truth, Saturday Encore Edition. Charlotte Littlefield and myself, George Butler, welcome you to this weekly weekend encore presentation. First hour will be with Robert Paxton, author of The Anatomy of Fascism. The second hour this weekend will be with Todd Fletcher, who's edited over 9 books written by David Ray Griffin. We'll be interviewing Todd Fletcher about David Ray Griffin's book entitled Cognitive Infiltration. Enjoy.
It's not your fault, baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. This is George Butler, and Charlotte Littlefield, my co-host, is off tonight.
Surprise, George.
We've got just a really... What's that?
Surprise, George, I'm here.
Okay. Well, she was off. You came back in, huh? Well, welcome, Charlotte, to our program.
Thank you, George. I couldn't miss Robert Paxton. You've booked such an amazing guest tonight.
Oh, okay. That's fine. That's fine. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Paxton. He was born in Lexington, Virginia, educated at Washington and Lee University before earning an M.A. at Oxford University as a Rhodes Scholar. And he earned his Ph.D. at Harvard University. He also taught at the University of California at Berkeley and the State University of New York at Stony Point before joining the faculty of Columbia University in New York, where he is now Emeritus Professor of History. In April of 2009, the French government bestowed on him and awarded Dr. Paxton the Legion of Honor. Welcome to our program, Dr. Robert Paxton.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
Well, we really do appreciate you being able to come on to our program. We're talking tonight about this book about the anatomy of fascism. How long did it take you to put that together, Doctor?
Well, it grows out of a course that I taught for about 20 years, but the writing, I guess, took me 6 or 8, but I was working full time at other things, but it took me a long time.
You know, you have this definition. Let me read this definition. Some of our listening audience is new to some of these terms, and some are really into it deeply. But let me read you this this definition that you came up with, which is really great and very insightful. This is, quote, fascism may be defined as a form of political behavior marked by obsessive preoccupation with community decline, humiliation, or victimhood, and by compensatory cults of unity, energy, and purity, in which a mass-based party of committed nationalist militants, working in uneasy but effective collaboration with traditional elites, abandons democratic liberties and pursues with redemptive violence and without ethical or legal restraints goals of internal cleansing and external expansion. Boy, I tell you, you really put a lot of thought in that, didn't you?
Well, I tried to make it shorter, but I wanted to fit all the parts in, so it had to be kind of long.
And what, sir? Good evening. I'm Charlotte Littlefield. I was wondering what countries were you thinking of? Basic examples that come to your mind about fascism.
Well, the two main examples are Italy and Germany. It was in Italy that Mussolini invented the term, and I think he invented the practice. And then Hitler came along 10 years later and carried it much further. Those are the two countries where fascism came to power and exercised power and in Hitler's case, took it to its absolute, utter, final conclusion. But there were fascist movements in every European country and in the United States in the 1930s.
You seem to say in your book and your some of the excerpts that I've read that it's hard to define it too strictly, like America's form of fascism might be different than that of Europe. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, I thought that every country, fascism was just a little bit different in every country because fascists are nationalists and they want to put their national identity first. And so the kinds of imagery and the kinds of issues that appealed in one country and could justify a dictatorship in one country wouldn't be exactly the same as the others. And so if you tried, and George Lincoln Rockwell tried in the United States to create a Nazi party with the swastika and all those things, and it was perceived as foreign. But a man named Paley with the silver shirts, he used American symbolism, and then it went down a little bit better. So the symbols and even the issues differ with each nation.
Right.
But the kind of aims you have are always the same. That is to say, you set aside democracy because you think it's not letting your country decline, and you have this violent movement of getting rid of the internal enemies and unifying your country by force and maybe waging expansive war.
Do you see in America today some of these very dangerous trends that are underway?
Well, I'm very reluctant to use the term fascism loosely. It's about the worst thing you can say because everybody remembers the death camps. Everybody still remembers those horrible scenes when the American soldiers arrived at the killing fields in eastern Germany and Poland and opened up those camps and saw those piles of bodies, which is fascism driven to its utter final conclusion, and it's a term that it's the nastiest thing. It's the most horrible label you can attach to anybody. But I think that if you looked at the history of these fascist countries, they started out without such violence, and there are some parallels. I don't think we have a fully developed fascist movement in America. There are a lot of people who are complaining about big government and taxes, but that's not fascism because fascists wanted a strong state. I think what we've got in this country is populism. People who, there's a lot of people who are angry at politicians and who are bitter about losing their homes or their jobs, and they don't want to pay taxes, higher taxes, and they don't want government regulation. But that's not fascism. Fascism meant a dictatorship, more government regulation. It's populism, but I don't myself like it. I think it diverts us from the real problems at hand. I thought that back in the last decade, our government took some steps that sounded to me something like movement in that direction when we set aside the rule of law because we thought national security demanded it, like the Guantanamo camp. I thought that to me had an echo. I think we occasionally took one or two steps in that direction without getting really there.
Well, yeah, since 9/11, it seems to have changed everything. You know, it just seemed to cast a pall upon America, and the people seem to be under some kind of really great influence, but that could easily be manipulated, be used to manipulate by some of the elites.
Yes, I think that it was a horrendous shock. I was, of course, living in New York, and it was an appalling shock, and we needed to keep a really steady hand at that point and to deal with it within our legal framework. And some of the time we did, and once or twice we stepped outside our legal traditions. And that was, I thought, a step in the wrong direction.
Okay, Dr. Thaxton, thank you for being with us. We'll be right back. We have to take a brief commercial break here, and then we'll be right back and continue this conversation. But we certainly enjoy you being with us this evening. We'll be right back. Thank you, sir.
You feel tired when talking about important topics like money and politics?
Sorry.
Are you confused by words like the Constitution or the Federal Reserve?
What?
If so, you may be diagnosed with the deadliest disease known today, stupidity. Hi, my name is Steve Holt, and like millions of other Americans, I was diagnosed with stupidity at an early age. I had no idea that the number one cause of the disease is found in almost every home in America, the television. Unfortunately, that puts most Americans at risk of catching stupidity, but there is hope. The staff at Brave New Books have helped me and thousands of other Foxaholics suffering from sports zombieism recover. And because of Brave New Books, I now enjoy reading and watching educational documentaries without feeling tired or uninterested. So if you or anybody you know suffers from stupidity, then you need to call 512-480-2503 or visit them at 1904 Guadalupe or BraveNewBookstore.com.
Side effects from using Brave New Books products may include discernment, an enlarged vocabulary, and an overall increase in mental functioning.
What is a wind generator?
How can the wind produce power for a small cabin?
How can wind energy be stored and used during an emergency?
Can I assemble my own wind generator?
For answers to questions about wind power, visit windbluepower.com. Did you know the wind could provide your family with emergency power? It can with a wind generator from windbluepower.com. Learn how our amazing LifeBreeze wind generator kits start charging a 12-volt battery and just 6 mile per hour wind. Or see the new Cyclone X2 dual kit featuring two wind generators on just one tower. And learn why schools and universities across the country utilize our products to teach about wind power and alternative energy at windbluepower.com. All kits qualify for a 30% IRS tax credit for residential energy efficient property. Enter coupon code RADIO for a 5% discount at windbluepower.com. That's windbluepower.com or call 800-976-0026. That's 800-976-0026.
Making the right decisions is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or at worst, depression? Hi, Ted Anderson from Midas Resources. We all know when a company acts irresponsibly, divesting ourselves in a move towards safety is prudent. When the market becomes volatile, U.S. treasuries are a safe haven. But what do you do when the U.S. government overextends itself and spends beyond its means? Many investors are turning toward gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas Resources has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold, discussing costs, benefits, risks, featuring full-color illustrations, weights, and measures. The book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold may be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, the book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
It's the end of summer blowout sale at HerbalHealer.com.
Now take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on colloidal silver.
500 parts per million, pharmaceutical grade.
All sizes from 2 ounces to a gallon on sale.
It's simply the best colloidal silver available.
And CoQ10 100 milligrams with hawthorn.
An exceptional supplement for heart and arterial health.
Is only $19.
Plus, get the number one arthritis supplement, glucosamine chondroitin.
60 caps for only $12.
Where?
HerbalHealer.com.
Super Femplex and Super Maleplex, both great formulas for reproductive tonification,
are on sale now, 90 tabs, only $15.
Need a safe and mild colon detoxifier?
Herbal Healer Academy's Colon Enhancer large 250-capsule bottle is now only $18. There's so much more at HerbalHealer.com.
But not much time.
The end of summer blowout sale ends October 13th.
New customers get a free catalog with your first order.
Log on and hit the summer special now at HerbalHealer.com.
Bringing you the best in alternative talk radio
for over 10 years.
GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back, Dr. Robert O. Paxton, author of, six books or five books. Is that right, Dr. Paxton?
Yeah, six.
Okay, we got Parade.
Anatomy of Fascism, right.
And that's what we're talking about. You seem to be averaging one about a decade.
Well, I work fairly slowly, yeah.
Yeah, well, you started in 1966, so that's, you're doing better than most, sir. My question to you would be, there's a scholar that has put forth the claim that, and his name is Peter Del Scott, and he claims that after 9/11, there was a continuation of government, a COG issued, and that every year Obama, in fact, the reason why Peter Del Scott brought this up was that it went under the radar on the news, but President Obama renewed the continuation of government, and that we're still, every year, we're still under a state of emergency since 9/11. Were you aware of that?
I'm not aware of that. I don't know about the fact that we're under a state of emergency. I'm not aware. I was not aware of that. I know that it has taken a long time to get the Guantanamo prison wound down and dealt with. But the state of emergency, I'm not aware of that. I don't know about that legislation.
What was it, Dr. Paxton, about Guantanamo that you thought was just outright, just unfair and way outside the Constitution? Could you characterize it like that?
Yeah. Well, I think that the central issue was the use of torture, which is, it sometimes happens in the field in the heat of battle, but it's not in our legal tradition. And I saw the films of those people in shackles and with their heads covered and so forth, and they were subjected to personal indignities, and that doesn't serve any intelligence gathering purpose. And that seemed to me to be stepping way outside of our legal traditions.
Right.
Absolutely. What are you familiar with the another piece of legislation? There are two that I wanted to ask you about. One was the Patriot Act. Really brought a lot of searching without warrants, phone calls, and these type of things. What are your thoughts about the Patriot Act?
Well, I think that it probably went a good bit farther than was necessary. We actually had in our legislation a great many provisions that gave the executive a tremendous amount of power. There was, for example, we already had an arrangement whereby if national security seemed to be at stake, there was a legal panel that would authorize the use of wiretaps. And President Bush didn't want to go through that legal panel, even though it was named by the president and was not really a very independent body. He wanted the president to be able to decide personally and directly, and that seemed to be entirely unnecessary. We have in urgent situations, presidents have gone through this legal panel and have gotten legal authorization to carry out wiretaps, and even that is an infringement of liberties, but we obviously have to find a balance between protecting ourselves and extending liberty to all. But it seemed to me we had a great deal of the mechanisms in place to deal with these problems with what we already had.
Right.
Do fascist regimes like the Nazis and Mussolini and them, do they put under surveillance more and more of their citizens? Is that sort of characteristic?
Absolutely. And they have an explicit doctrine that there's no universal principles like the sanctity of human life and so forth. What really counts is the welfare of the nation and the safety of the nation and the aggrandizement of the nation. If something seemed to be threatening Italy or threatening Germany, they had no legal limit to what they could do. So in Italy, they started putting people in camps, and in Germany it went much further right from the first. The first camp was at Dachau, just outside of Munich, and that was in just a few months after Hitler took power. And those were dissidents, critics of fascism. They hadn't yet started the purge of the Jews, members of Democratic and Socialist parties, though some of them were Jews, but they were in there because they were political opponents. And so those regimes practiced a very high degree of surveillance. They had secret police, and they rewarded people who turned in their neighbors and children who turned in their parents, and it was everyone felt like they were being watched.
Right. Are you familiar with Top Secret America? There was a series of articles about 854,000 people now that the government is employing with top secret clearances. And they've come about with these different agencies and so forth over the last few years. And they have nearly one out of every 300 Americans that has a top secret clearance.
Well,
and they're employed in all
yeah.
kinds of different security capacities.
Right. Well,
it's like you were talking about earlier.
Foreign intelligence. I don't think they're all snooping on us. I was in the Navy in the Foreign Affairs branch, and I had a top secret clearance, and I was working on foreign intelligence. I don't think all those people are snooping on us. I think it's something to watch. We don't want that kind of society. We want to be able to trace the people who want to do us harm, but we don't want to threaten the liberties of our own citizens.
Yes, that's right. I was in the ASA, Army Security Agency, which was, we reported to the NSA, but we certainly didn't operate within this country, but I'm afraid they have the capacity and authorization now to do that.
Yeah, when the CIA was set up, it wasn't supposed to work inside the USA, and they have the authority to do so, and I think
that's what's so troubling to many people, and you know what I mean, and it's scary to many Americans. They don't like the trends that have occurred since 9/11 in these areas that we just pointed out, and I think you're agreeing with that it could be a problem, right?
Well, I think it's something that we think we need to watch. I think that we've taken steps in the right direction. I think that there's a decisive turn away from the use of torture. I mean, I was for a time in a Naval Intelligence Reserve, and I learned enough to learn that torture doesn't really work. Not only is it reprehensible, but it doesn't actually get you information. It gets you what the tortured person thinks you want to hear, and it's a skillful intelligence agent can use, can play upon a person's vanity and you seem to know more than he knows and get quite a lot of information out of somebody. Torture does not work as well as a skillful cross-examination.
Right.
Yeah, well,
Charlotte
sure
Littlefield, Charlotte was in the Army and the Navy also.
Wow, I don't know many people who are in mostly Army.
Yes, you started out as a Navy swabby, okay? You know, Doctor, you know, I was Army, you know, and we have to put down these Navy people.
Well, thank you for being with us.
But we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back. We have two more segments with you, and thank you very much for being with us this evening. We certainly are enjoying the conversation. Thank you, Doctor. We'll be right back.
Where have all the military surplus stores gone? Don't worry, you don't need one, because everything you need at Military Surplus is at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com, one of the last surviving true military surplus stores in the country. Go online now to MainMilitary.com and discover a source for hard-to-find surplus items at true surplus prices. Surplus gun cleaning kits as low as $2.99, complete chemical suits as low as $11.99. See our huge selection of gas masks, filters, and accessories. Finish M10 gas masks are $3 for $30, and Swiss filters are $3 for $12. Searching for Strike Anywhere matches? MainMilitary.com has them, plus a whole new product line of survival and first aid kits and lots more. Get free shipping on orders over $50 only at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com, or call 877-608-0179, 877-608-0179. MainMilitary.com, the main name in military supply.
buy the case, or buy the pallet, Sapaco SurePak MREs are the most well-balanced, great-tasting meals ready to eat available at MyersCustomSupply.com. Sapaco SurePak MREs are great for any situation. Come with or without flameless ration heaters, are easy to transport, and easy to store with a 3 to 5 year shelf life. And you can buy just a case or an entire pallet. Either way, Sapaco SurePak MREs are ready to eat hot or cold. Experience superior customer service from the number one Sapaco supplier that's been in business since 1997. When you order your Sapaco SurePak MREs from MyersCustomSupply.com, get fast free shipping and 5% off your total order by using promo code GCN5 at checkout. Call 1-800-451-6105 or visit MyersCustomSupply.com. That's M-E-Y-E-R-S CustomSupply.com or call 800-451-6105. For the lowest prices on the internet, visit MyersCustomSupply.com.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
Search no more.
It's good stuff.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back to our special guest, Dr. Robert Paxton, an American historian, author of several books, and tonight we're talking about his book, The Anatomy of Fascism. Welcome back, Dr. Paxton.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I have a question, George, gentlemen, concerning international bankers, and it's my understanding that Ford Motor Company was actually making the tanks for Hitler, and when the Allies went in to bomb, they actually ended up destroying corporate property. So what does corporations and international bankers have to do with fascism?
Well, I think the company you mean was General Motors. General Motors owned and still owns Opel, which is a big German automobile company, and when the war came, Opel made tanks, and General Motors, the Nazi regime took Opel out of the hands of General Motors, and they claimed they didn't really have anything to do with this, but it certainly was American property in Nazi Germany being used by the Nazi regime. But get back to the banking issue. The best view now is that the bankers and the industrialists weren't so keen on Hitler. They thought he was an economic radical, but they wanted someone a little more traditionally conservative. But when he got power, they made their peace with him, and they profited greatly under the regime. I think most of the German businessmen wanted to export, and German bankers wanted to do international banking. And when Hitler came to power, they set up economic nationalism and reduced foreign trade and exchanged things by border and controlled exchanges of currency and so forth. And the bankers and the industrialists had to work under very different rules, but they liked that better than the Republic beforehand, because the socialists were very powerful in the Republic, and the trade unions were very powerful in the Weimar Republic, and they made their peace with Hitler. I think they thought of him as a lesser evil, and they got along okay, and they made a lot of money out of the Nazi regime.
Well, did the Catholic Church support Hitler, his rise to power?
Pardon me?
Did they finance his rise
to power?
Yeah.
Well, a few of them did. I think they gave more money to people like Franz von Papen, who was a more traditional conservative. They gave some money to Hitler. Hitler got a lot of money out of his meetings. You had to pay a little bit to get into these rallies, and there were hundreds of thousands of people who came to listen to his harangues, and they sold insignia and pamphlets and stuff, and he was financed in part that way, and in part by the gifts of some industrialists. But it was after power, when the industrialists made their peace with him, and then they gave him a lot of money.
Well,
how about I.G. Farben? Do you have a handle on I.G. Farben? What happened to them?
Yeah. Yeah, well, IG Farben was the biggest corporation in Europe. It was a chemical, it was a combine of chemical companies. Farben means colors. They made dyes, chemical dyes, and they put together this huge conglomerate of chemical and they were they profited tremendously by foreign trade, and they didn't really want to go the route that Hitler was going to take of closing the frontiers and having economic autarky. That's say reducing everything within your country, everything devoted to defense. But once Hitler came to power and they were happy enough to have the trade unions lose their power and lose the right to strike and so forth, and they learned to live under the new system, and they made tremendous amounts of money. They retooled and they reorganized to work for German rearmament. They made synthetic fuel. Germany doesn't have any oil, so they made synthetic fuel out of coal, and they made a fortune out of the Nazi government. But they didn't actually help him to power, but they helped him wage war. They helped him get ready for war, and that's what they were tried for after the war.
Right.
Well, I apologize. I meant to. I stand corrected. It's General Motors, and it's Opel.
Yeah, it is General Motors. But your general gist of your question is accurate. There were it was American property in Nazi Germany, working for the German war effort. It had been taken out of their hands, of course. It would have been sort of quasi-nationalized. But after the war, General Motors wanted to get it back. They got it back.
What about the Vatican?
Some of the wartime profits.
Yeah.
Well, they were
all
interested in what Standard Oil of New Jersey was caught trading with a Nazi, were they not, through third parties?
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of companies. Well, we were neutral, you see, until Pearl Harbor. We were neutral until December 1941, and we were trading with a lot of people. Through third countries and so forth, surreptitiously, but sure.
Well, what about
an interesting story about William Stevenson coming to America and with a secret spy team to entice us into the war earlier than we might have been enticed into World War II?
Well, he came to Washington and the British Embassy too. They were doing everything they could to get the Americans to help England in his war effort, and Roosevelt wanted to do that, and indeed he got some things through Congress even before Pearl Harbor. There was the destroyers for bases deal, whereby we gave them 50 old warships, and they gave us use of a bunch of British bases. And then there was lend-lease, by which we lent them the money and they leased the equipment, because we remembered that in the First World War, the countries like Britain and France had run up a huge war debt, and it just wrecked the financial system after the war. And then there was the draft. We started having selective service. We started having compulsory military service before Pearl Harbor. And so there were those tendencies. America was deeply divided. There were people who wanted to help Britain, and there were people who wanted to stay out of the war. And so the British embassy and people like Stevenson were trying to encourage those parts of America that wanted to help Britain. Britain, of course, was nearly on the ropes in the fall of 1940 and the spring of 1941.
Right.
That's true. And there are some people who go so far as to think that Roosevelt knew about Pearl Harbor and didn't say anything, because he wanted us to go into the war. I don't believe that story, but
do you think 9/11 has been effectively much like a Pearl Harbor effect?
Well,
some of the elitists?
It was a shock. I can't think of anything else that happened to the United States.
Do you think these elitists are really using it to manipulate the American public?
Well, I think Pearl Harbor was a much bigger thing. We were invaded by a foreign country. And our military base was attacked, and we lost a lot of ships, and we lost a lot of soldiers' lives, and it wasn't just Pearl Harbor, it was Wake Island and a lot of other bases, and we were open to Japanese attack, and that was a much, much more serious thing than 9/11. And after Pearl Harbor, of course, the country was completely turned around for war. I remember my father just bought a 1942 Chevrolet, and they took it away from us. In just after December the 7th, 1941, and I was 9 years old, and I was really, really sore. I was ready to cuss out President Roosevelt. But that's what we did.
That's
we
right.
You
experienced some of this firsthand, did you not?
I did. I lived it as a child, with conscious of what was going on. But the 9/11 was much, much less serious than that. It was a criminal act. It wasn't done by a state. It was done by terrorists as part of a movement, and they killed nearly 3,000 Americans. It was a criminal act, and it deserved to be punished. We needed to be very careful about whether we perverted our own legal system and political system to carry out that punishment.
Right, I understand. Yeah. We're going to take another break here, and then we'll be right back with our concluding segment. And we'd like for you to give us some suggestions about what to watch for and to ward off any possible bad trends in this country where we could stay away from, you know.
Do you feel tired when talking about important topics like money and politics?
Boring.
Are you confused by words like the Constitution or the Federal Reserve?
What?
If so, you may be diagnosed with the deadliest disease known today, stupidity. Hi, my name is Steve Holt, and like millions of other Americans, I was diagnosed with stupidity at an early age. I had no idea that the number one cause of the disease is found in almost every home in America, the television. Unfortunately, that puts most Americans at risk of catching stupidity, but there is hope. The staff at Brave New Books have helped me and thousands of other foxaholics suffering from sports zombieism recover. And because of Brave New Books, I now enjoy reading and watching educational documentaries without feeling tired or uninterested. So if you or anybody you know suffers from stupidity, then you need to call 512-480-2503 or visit them at 1904 Guadalupe or BraveNewBookstore.com.
Side effects from using Brave New Books products may include discernment, an enlarged vocabulary, and an overall increase in mental functioning.
I'm concerned about food for my family in the event of an emergency, and I know you are too. Are you ready? Don't wait for an emergency to happen. Put a plan together now with quality dehydrated food from Ready Reserve Foods. For nearly 40 years, Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, canning the finest in dehydrated foods. Other companies just broker canned foods. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer, controlling quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packing for maximum shelf life. Ready Reserve offers a balanced selection of fruits, vegetables, dairy products, proteins, and grains. Choose from a variety of pre-selected units or order by individual can to customize your own plan. When you purchase from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Call today for a free catalog, 1-800-453-2202, or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Call 1-800-453-2202. Ready Reserve Foods. Factory direct, wholesale pricing.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
If you want to breathe better, please write this down now. BreatheBetterAir.com. You don't have time to waste. Go to BreatheBetterAir.com and see the stylish Air Oasis 3000 Air Purifier. It has no filters, no messy plates to clean, requires no maintenance for 3 years, is built by hand in the U.S., and comes with a 3-year warranty. GCN listeners get a $100 discount and free air quality test kit at BreatheBetterAir.com. Or call 806-477-0322 to breathe better air now.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio.
You guys are awesome.
I love this station. I really do.
GCN.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with... Welcome back, Dr. Paxton.
Hello.
Yeah, welcome
Hello,
back
I'm
to
back.
Our program. Yeah, there's one little detail here I'd like for you to clear up. In Nazi Germany, pre-Nazi Germany, or right at the beginning, the Catholic Church, did they not have a treaty, a Lateran treaty with Nazi Germany? Is that right?
That's correct. But
and I believe the Catholic Party at the time was the center party was their political party.
That's correct.
Yeah, and they pushed, the Center Party pushed for a concordant with a new Nazi, actually with a German Republic, which preceded Nazi regime. Is that correct?
Well, the Vatican at that point was concluded concordats with all sorts of countries because they wanted to guarantee the liberty of their schools, the Catholic school system, and they had concordats with most countries, including dictatorships like Spain and Portugal and so forth. And so in the summer of 1933, they had concluded one with Hitler. But they also, the Catholic Party, the Center Party, didn't vote for Hitler before he came to power. But after he came to power, Hitler needed their votes not just a majority, but a two-thirds majority to get an enabling act in the spring of 1933 that would permit him to legislate by decree. And the Center Party voted for that. That was a bad thing to do. And the reward was to have a concordat which would protect the liberty of Catholic schools in Nazi Germany. Later on, it's true that there were some Catholic priests and even members of the hierarchy who criticized Hitler and who even resisted him, a few of them. Some of them were heroes that way, but beginning they had a share in consolidating Hitler's power.
Right. Do you feel that any new type of fascist regime would be a partnership between the corporate structure or the corporations and government, but government being the minor partner?
Well, I think what you had with the classical fascist regimes in Italy and Germany, you had a partnership between the party. It was a fascist party that was full of militants and fairly strong, and then you had the government, and the business interests were a third partner, and it was a sort of three-way partnership. The party had the power, and as I said before, the businesses, many of them regretted the era when they could trade abroad and so forth, but they were very glad to get rid of labor unions, and so they went along with it. So, I think you could speak of a three-way partnership between German business, the state, the government, the civil service, the state agencies, and the Nazi Party that had the upper hand.
Right. Have you taken a look at all about this G20 organization organizing this Basel Accord III, which they're reorganizing many of the international financial organizations and institutions? Have you looked at that at all?
I have not. Basel Accord III is something I have confessed I don't know about. By definition, the fascist regimes were nationalist, and they were not internationalist. They were opposed to any kind of international organization. So that's that's a different kind of a thing.
Right,
I'd say.
What's troubling to some of the patriot movement in this country is that they believe that this international reorganization will take away many of their rights and freedoms on the local level. There's Agenda 21 and things like this that are being pushed through the UN. And this is where it's troubling to many of the patriot people out there.
Yes.
Commissions, the Military Commissions Act and the Homeland Security, all that, Patriot Act and all that, since 9/11, has done nothing but give more and more power to our central government, to our federal government. And especially the president.
That has been a long-term trend in our country. The powers of the federal government grew during the First World War, and they grew during the Depression, and they grew during the Second World War, and that's still going on. Sometimes it's useful, like the Pure Food and Drug Act, which I think protects us, and sometimes it's invasive. It's something to keep an eye on.
Right. What kind of recommendations could you give us between now and the end of the program? We probably have about 5 or 6 minutes here. What would you recommend to our listening audience to watch for about our own government that might be helpful in citizens recognizing any troubling types of trends?
Well, I think that I think we want to be watchful about our civil liberties. If it looks like the government is going to grasp too much power to arrest and to intern and to a sentence without going through legal processes, then this is a very big danger. I think that's one of the things to be looking out for. I think that there are times when there need to be some rules. I think the ideal thing is to have to be able to have the energy and the creativity of businessmen, but they need to have rules, like in a football game. And you know, you don't want to just get out there and fight. There's the yard lines, and there's a referee, and there's rules. And with banking and industry, there needs to be rules. And I think we want to avoid a situation where banks and mortgage lenders and so forth can do anything they darn well please and create a big housing bubble or run up huge degrees of debt, market securities that don't have anything behind them. I think there need to be rules of that sort, and I don't think that's bad. I think we want to be able to simultaneously have the creativity of individual enterprise and then have some oversight, some rules. If the rules become stifling, then that's bad.
One of the things I can see is recently they've enacted legislation that gives the Federal Reserve, which is a private corporation, more power to do as they please. Now, to me, that is really just wrong, you know, and I think Congress is way off base on many unconstitutional acts that they're enacting.
Well, the Federal Reserve we've had since 1913, and it has a curious hybrid nature. It is its own business, but it functions as a national bank, and
there's a lawsuit up in New York, Bloomberg. One of their reporters brought it against the Federal Reserve, and their Federal Reserve is refusing to give information on credits that they gave to overseas companies. I mean, it's lawlessness, like you're talking about in some of your excerpts and books, you know. It's beginning to be lawless at times, you know, in this country, it seems like.
Yeah, we need to have rules, and we need that the government needs to be limited by rules, and it needs to play by the law as well. I don't know about a particular lawsuit, but the Federal Reserve mainly sets interest rates and things of that sort, and tries to affect the money supply. That seems to be a legitimate function when they claim to be above the law. Then that would be bad.
Right. Well, those are just some of the things. We represent a good portion of the Patriot movement, and you know, we're concerned like the Tea Party. What about this Tea Party movement? What do you think about that?
Well, as I said, some people have tried to make me claim it that fascist because they're angry and so forth, and I don't think that at all. I think they're populist. I think they're contradictory. They feel like not pay taxes and not have any government rules, but at the same time, most of them are very happy to have Medicare and Social Security.
There's a lot of people taking social programs and checks. I got you. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Paxton, for being with us. We certainly appreciate your time and trouble, and we certainly wish you well, and we'll ask you back sometime. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thanks very much for asking me.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Well, Charlotte, we'll come back on the next top of the hour, and we've got Todd Fletcher sitting in for David Ray Griffin, okay?
Gotta be awesome. We'll see you on the
other side. Okay, tune in.